isn't home. Talking about presumptuous decisions, Psalm 19:11. Who can understand his errors? Cleanse thou me from secret faults. Keep back thy servant also from presumptuous sins. Let them not have dominion over me. Then shall I be upright, and I shall be innocent from the great transgression. See how he put that? Let not presumptuous, my assumptions about things, have dominion over me. Guide my life. Make the decisions for me. With things I can't understand, I never will understand, I need a greater hand than mine to guide my life. I can't see tomorrow. Concerning our souls, we have two categories you could think of it as dangers to us. One is those things that are open and we clearly see them, and some are hidden. Assumptions are often on the hidden part. Assumptions are an opportunity for a person to do wrong without realizing that they have done wrong. And that's dangerous. You don't want to get in trouble with the Lord that way. You don't want to get in trouble with Roberta that way. And so I don't want her to, when she says, are you talking to me? I know it's time to back up and go over that subject again. Missed a connection there somewhere, etc. There are some assumptions in the Bible. The Lord used assumptions. The people, the Israelites came to the Jordan River, sent spies over into the land, found some giants over there. So what? But the assumption that they made is we can't handle them. You're going to get a bunch of us hurt. You go over there, it's not going to be good. That's an assumption. It wasn't the reality. Well, there are some others. There was a bunch of people coming up to attack the Israelites one time. I think they were Moabites or one of the Ites. Ask our leader, what shall we do? And the Lord told them, start digging ditches. So they dug ditches down in the valley, and the Lord sent rain and ditches fall up with water. The enemies gathered up on the hills around them. Sun came up. They saw that water down there, and they thought it was blood. That was an assumption. And scared them all so bad, they turned around and left. Gideon, he used an assumption, didn't he? The Lord told him, you got too many soldiers with you. There's only so many Midianites down there that we're like grasshoppers in their sight. You know, you're badly outnumbered, and the Lord said, you're still way too many. Pared them down to 300, took away their swords, stationed them on the hills, and Midianites are camped in the valley, and the Israelites separated man from man, no swords, just trumpets and lamps under a pitcher. When you hear Gideon say, the sword of the Lord and of Gideon, everybody break their lamp and blow their trumpet, and the Midianites looked up and saw all that ring of lights all around the hills, and they thought every one of them represented 1,000 men or so, and they said, we're all surrounded, they didn't even have swords. But they didn't need them because the Midianites pulled their swords and started killing each other. And it's all based on an assumption. It wasn't really true. Assumptions can make you fight ghosts that aren't really there. Now, some messages teach us deep Christian graces where there are. Grace of God brings salvation, appeared unto all men, things like that. My topic today is how to apply Christian graces. It's hard enough to fight the devils that are really there. You make it doubly hard if you're fighting ghosts. And it's possible to do that. Assumptions can kill you. Assumptions can kill you. There was a story from Baton Rouge not too many years ago. Halloween evening. You know how people do things here in the United States on Halloween evening. Young people were going up and down the streets and trick-or-treating in houses. The idea was to get candy. There was a young man in the group who was from Japan. He was an exchange student. Going with some of his high school friends, thought that was really fun. Get to be an American, you get free candy. Didn't have any Halloween in Japan. And he was with a group of them, and they went on a man's lawn. And the man was older, and he was handicapped. And he was living by himself, and he was afraid. And he saw them coming across his lawn, and he yelled, freeze. And all Americans stood still, but the Japanese boy didn't know what freeze meant. Freeze? To Japanese? I'm not cold. It's Baton Rouge, Louisiana. The man shot him. Killed him right there in his front lawn. Made a big incident with Japan. He was real sorry about that. I guess he still is. He's still in prison to grieve about it. Your assumptions can get you killed. I had this story given to me. A group of fellows, they were on an excursion. They had weapons. Two real close friends, and one of them was sitting there with a rifle between his knees, and the other one put his thumb over the barrel and said, "I bet you it's not loaded. Go ahead and shoot it. Let's see." And it went right through his chin and right out the top of his head. They both thought it was unloaded. An accidental death, more people are killed by unloaded guns than they are with ones that are loaded. And that's the first rule of gun safety, and both these men knew that. They knew how foolish they were, but they made an assumption. They made an assumption. Assumptions can get you killed. Assumptions can break your heart. They can hurt you. I knew a young man who fell in love with a girl. He was a worshiper from afar, if you know what I mean. She didn't show him any signs that she was interested in him. And matter of fact, the way things turned out, she wasn't interested in him. But he took any little motion that she made. If she said hello to him, if she nodded her head and he saw her do it, anything, if she walked close by to where he was standing, he'd go home and think about that. She really likes me. I can tell it. She smiled when I went by. And he built that up in his mind until it was a mountain. And she didn't even know it was going on. You can hurt yourself with assumptions. That's painful. That's painful. When I knew him, he was in big trouble over that. And in a sense, it contributed to ruining his life because he never found anywhere to stabilize again after that. And when people have that much pent-up passion and they start directing it that way, a little thing like common sense doesn't help very much. And try to sit down and tell him, look, Bob, she really doesn't even know you're there. And she really, really doesn't have an interest in going with you or building a life with you. But he's got those little gestures. I saw her smile. Never mind that she was looking at somebody else when she smiled. It's in his head. It's an assumption. It can hurt you. You understand what I'm trying to say about assumptions? Assumptions can make you look foolish. I will read you a poem about a foolish assumption. This was written by James Field. And the story that he's describing is a barber shop, probably in a small town somewhere, and a group of men there sitting around like they do in barber shops. Sometimes the older guys like to get in those places and just match wits with each other and try to make somebody look silly if they can. This young fella is a naturalist. He's just graduated from college and probably got a job with the Forest Service or somewhere. And his professors have been telling him how smart he is and how much he knows and how capable he is. So he comes into the barbershop and takes a seat and says, "Who stuffed that white owl?" No one spoke in the shop. The barber was busy and he couldn't stop. The customers, waiting their turns, were all reading the Daily, the Herald, the Post, little heeding the young man who blurted out such a blunt question. Not one raised a head or even made a suggestion. Just put their faces in their newspapers. And the barber kept on shaving. "Don't you see, Mr. Brown," cried the youth with a frown, "how wrong the whole thing is, how preposterous each wing is, how flattened the head is, how jammed down the neck is, in short, the whole owl, what an ignorant wreck 'tis. I make no apology, I've learned owlology. I've passed days and nights in 100 collections and cannot be blinded to any deflections arising from unskillful fingers that fail to stuff a bird right from his beak to his tail. Mr. Brown, Mr. Brown, do take that bird down. You'll soon be the laughing stock all over town." and the barber kept on shaving. I've studied owls and other night fowls, and I tell you what I know to be true. An owl cannot roost with his limbs so unloosed. No owl in this world ever had his claws curled, ever had his legs slanted, ever had his bill canted, ever had his neck screwed into that attitude. He can't do it, because 'tis against all bird laws. Anatomy teaches, ornithology preaches, an owl has a toe that can't turn out so. I've made the white owl my study for years. To see such a job almost moves me to tears. Mr. Brown, I'm amazed you've been so crazed as to put up a bird in that posture absurd. To look at that owl really brings on a dizziness. A man who stuffed him don't half know his business. And our barber kept on shaving. With some sawdust and bark, I could stuff in the dark an owl better than that. I could make an old hat look more like an owl than that horrid fowl, stuck up there so stiff like a side of coarse leather. In fact, about him, there's not one natural feather. Just then, with a wink and a sly, normal lurch, the owl very gravely got down from his perch, walked around and regarded his fault-finding critic, who thought he was stuffed, with a glance analytic, and then fairly hooted as if he should say, "Your learning's at fault this time, anyway. Don't waste it again on a live bird, I pray. I'm an owl, you're another. Sir critic, good day." And the barber kept on shaving. It's possible to be just that foolish in life. On your assumptions, just assume. And you see, you're learning, and what all you think about, you know about life, well, that can augment your assumptions. What was the guy really trying to do? You really think he cared about how the owl looked? Or was he in there trying to impress everybody with how much he learned? And while he's trying to impress them, the other customers who knew the owl was alive, they just put their places in their papers and let him talk on and make as big a fool out of himself as he's willing to do. And life can do that to you too. So you got to be careful about the assumptions that we make along the journey. We all have to make some assumptions. We're wise to limit that as much as we can. We're wiser still to recognize that we have limitations on what we can understand about others. I went to a meeting one time. There was a brother there who was directing the services. He was acting as a host. I studied him. I've fallen into this trap. I studied him. I watched his mannerisms. I thought, how proud. That man is so arrogant in the way he handles himself, in the way he stands, in the way he makes his little speeches while he's inviting people to give their prayer requests and things. I thought, how proud. Well, something happened to him, and he went away. And then they asked me to take the prayer request. And when I got up there, I said, now I know what was the matter with him. He was scared. And that's what's the matter with me, too. I'm scared, and so I'm not acting like I normally would. Assumptions can get you in trouble, don't you see? And the consequence of that was, once I got past my attitude, we're able to develop a closer relationship with each other. It takes the Lord to reveal some things to us, and one of the ways he does it is by experience. Now I want to go back over this scripture again. Who can understand his errors? Cleanse thou me from secret faults. I didn't really think of it as a fault. It was secret to me. I was just so sure I was right. Spent 4 years in college studying birds. And I know birds from top to bottom. That's what he said. And I thought he was sure he's well within the bounds of where he ought to be. And he can safely shoot off his mouth, and he did. And yet, it's dangerous to judge somebody else. It's hard to see the motive of somebody else's heart. I'm glad we have a greater than we are who judges us here and at the judgment. I'll add a little aside from a base thought with that. Not only does the Lord see the depths of our hearts, but he also guaranteed that he would not judge according to the seeing of his eyes. seen down to the depths of our heart and perhaps knows that our motive is wrong and we shouldn't be where we are. But he doesn't judge it by that, even though his assessment is accurate. He judges us by the grace he has to give us to change it. And that's what his Spirit strives to do as long as we're here. Even if he sees you're wrong, he doesn't judge you according to that. He starts dealing with it gently and tenderly to change you and put you in a better place. That's the reason why I'm here today, because the Lord's had such mercy on my soul. So David prayed, "Who can understand his errors?" It means me. That's what he was saying. "Lord, I don't know what all I've got that I don't know about. Cleanse thou me from secret faults. Keep back thy servant also from presumptuous sins. Let them not have dominion over me." Secret faults. Maybe everybody else can see it, but I didn't. How does it help me if everybody else sees it and I don't see it? It would help me sometimes, my wife or somebody who sees a situation better than I do, to say, "Owls," and make me stop and think, "You're assuming something. You don't really know that that's what the situation is. Lord, use any means you want to keep me back from errors, to be cleansed from secret faults, hidden things." And now he gets real humble. "Keep back thy servant also from presumptuous sins." Keep back thy servant. I don't put myself very high in this regard, is what David said. I'm going to put it just in my words and save you some time. What he said was, "Lord, you know I'm trying to live for you. I mean to be your child, but this is something that can slip up on me and make me just actually do wrong and judge people wrong and make me get in trouble with you. And me not even realize that it's happening. And I realize I'm in so much need of help from that. I don't call myself your brother or your friend even. I'm your servant. I just want to bow down as low as I can get and open everything I got to you and beg you to have mercy on me. I don't claim to be equal with you in this regard in any sense. Lord, keep back thy servant also from presumptuous sins." It's a strong word, presumptuous. It means to bubble and to boil. And what it's talking about is that we humans, we have fine intelligence. There's nothing else on this planet that can reason like a human being can. But the trouble with it is, we allow our emotions to direct the way that we use our minds. If I don't like you, it's easy for me to use my mind to find all kinds of things wrong with you. Look at that person. They drive a foreign car. They're United States citizens. That's just disloyal. Is it? Import duties were paid on that car. Our government's decreed that it's legal. It may be a better car than American, but if I don't like you, it's easy to find things wrong with you. And how do you do it? You use that intelligence. If it started from ground zero, it wouldn't be so hard, but it doesn't. It starts from our feelings. "Keep back thy servant from boiling and bubbling sins," passionate feelings, emotions. The thing that clears our eyes more than anything else is when we'll get low before the Lord and beg him to give us a sweetness in our souls and a gentleness toward everyone around us. And then you look at things differently. Well, it did turn out to be a pretty good Toyota, and if you're about done with it, I'd like to buy it from you. Everything changes because of the grace. "Keep back thy servant also from presumptuous sins. Let them not have dominion over me." But what that means is then, Lord, if I ever get to the place that my feelings are governing all my life, I'm going to be in trouble. My emotions will have dominion over me. You know, like a child in a candy store want everything to see. Mother give them 50 cents and says, "Save a quarter for next week." No, but I got in the candy store and they got gumballs and they got hot licorice and I want all of it. And the whole 50 cents is gone. Borrow a quarter from somebody else and spend it all. And you can live your life that way. Just turn your feelings loose and do whatever you feel like doing. You wind up in trouble at the end. That's what this passage is talking about. Presumptuous sins. "Keep back thy servant. Lord, I need to get low because my feelings can affect me more than I know. Keep me back from that. I beg you to have mercy on me. I'll humble. If you show me this is my emotions, not what I think it is, I'm just sure that's a foreign car, and it's bad for our country for them to buy it. You can be so certain in your mind. I've spent days and nights in 1,000 collections, and I cannot be blinded to any deflections arising from unskillful fingers that fail to mount a bird right from his so on, beak to his tail. You can be so sure about it and still be wrong. And the reason isn't because that your learning's at fault. It's because you want to be known for whatever you are. That's what's troubling that young man. He wants to impress somebody. Well, he impressed them all right. And you can impress people in ways you don't want to. But the most serious is the Lord. Keep back thy servant also from presumptuous sins. Let them not have dominion over me. Then shall I be upright. That's the only way. That's the only way. And I shall be innocent from the great transgression. The great transgression means, the word that is drawn from means rebellion. If we follow our own ways long enough, it leads to rebellion against God. Then he said these great words, "Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer." Not only what I say, because I can learn to control my tongue if I will, so that if I assume something but I don't have any proof of it, I hang on to it. But that isn't where he stopped. He said, "The meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight." What I'm thinking about, Lord, to make it acceptable in your sight, I need to have the sweetness of your grace to give me power over my emotions so that I can see clearly what you're trying to show me is really going on. David wrote about it again in Psalm 91:5. "Thou shalt not be afraid for the terror by night, nor for the arrow that flieth by day." Terror by night is talking about dreadful things creeping up on you when you can't see it. It has to do with just this topic I'm trying to talk about today, being presumptuous. "Thou shalt not be afraid." It means there's a place where the Lord keeps us from that. It is possible to live an innocent life before the Lord. Then he says, "Nor for the pestilence that walketh in darkness, nor for the destruction that wasteth in noonday." Two kinds of battles for us to fight as Christians. One of them is open, one of them is hidden. These two verses deal with the hidden. Terror by night, that which walketh in darkness. Pestilence, which walketh in darkness. Mentioned a while ago, you can't see coronavirus. Organisms, you can't see them. You don't know where they are. They can infect us. There are none of us who know that where we are this morning, we didn't pick up some of it. None of us know. We take precautions, but none of us can be certain. It's invisible. It's the same way with the pestilence of assumptions. And it will affect us. It'll make us sick in the same way. It'll make our thinking sick and our understanding sick. The Lord made a promise to us, "Thou shalt not be afraid for the terror by night, nor the pestilence that walketh in darkness." How wrong can you be about it? It's an unhappy thing to misjudge your brother. Alfred Lord Tennyson, one of the greatest British English poets, wrote a poem that contained this line: "Oh me, for why is all around us here as if some lesser God had made the world, but had not force to shape it as he would?" You understand what that means? You look and see, why is there cancer? Why did God allow this to happen? Why does God allow innocent little children to be harmed? It looks so unjust. In my human being logic, it is. There are some things where I better trust it into the hands of one who's greater than I am. This is still his world, folks. He is absolutely just. He is going to rule it as it pleases him. A couple of fellows wrote a song in the 60s that had this in it: "If I ruled the world, every day would be the first day of spring. Every heart would have a new song to sing, and we'd sing of the joy every morning would bring. If I ruled the world, every man would be as free as a bird." And doesn't that sound good? Every voice would be heard. We'd treasure each day that occurred. Wouldn't that be nice? We was that way once. It wasn't God that changed it. It was us. Not me, but somebody made just like me. He changed it. And I can't go back to that state. Neither can God. It is that that has brought all this on the world. Faith is believing that in Jesus Christ and the wisdom of Almighty God, He has brought into this world the best possible answer to all the sin and sickness and death, the cancer, the heartbreak, everything that has to do with the misery of man. It all goes back to that point, and it's blasphemy for me to think if I had it in my hands, I could do it better than God could. Now, the devil will bring that temptation to you anytime something goes wrong in your life. Lord, why'd you let that happen to me? Be careful with that. Keep back thy servant from presumptuous sins. It's one thing to feel that way about your brother. It's something else to start blaming God. But they go hand in hand. If we dare to allow our feelings to run away with us, and that's what it really is, toward our brother, sooner or later, it's going to spill over unto God. Remember what Job said? Though he slay me, yet will I trust him. And so remember this, when the devil comes around maybe to tell you to be presumptuous about somebody. I could take an old hat in the dark and make it look more like an owl than that thing does. Start saying feathers, feathers, feathers. It's just an assumption. You'll be mistaken about some of them. Thank you so much for the courtesy of your attention this morning. May the Lord free us from foolish assumptions. Amen.